Chapter 7. Ari Ben Menashe, the spy who told all. From 1977 to 1987, Ari Ben Menashe moved in the highest circles of international espionage. The mysterious Iranian-born Israeli businessman worked for Israeli military intelligence, including being the handler for Robert Maxwell. In 1989, he was arrested in America for arms dealing, but was acquitted in 1990 after a jury believed that he was acting on behalf of Israel. The Israeli government tried to distance itself from him, and statements were issued that he never had anything to do with intelligence. But the book, The Assassination of Robert Maxwell, details Ari's involvement. He also wrote a book exposing the arms trade, Profits of War, Inside the Secret U.S.-Israeli Arms Network. Ari claimed that Epstein and Maxwell were running a honey trap, providing girls to powerful people to gain leverage over them and to obtain information for the Israelis. Interviewing Ari, I found him to be extremely guarded, yet he provided valuable snippets into the intelligence agency operation. And he gave the history of Epstein's relationship with the Maxwells, which mainstream media had failed to report. Here's an edited version of his interview. There are so many videos online about the Epstein case by researchers and journalists, and these videos, a lot of them are great information. But these are published by people looking into a goldfish bowl of the intelligence community. Now anyone who's worth their salt, who's been researching Epstein, would try and find one of the goldfish that are in the bowl to interview. And I'm blown away today by having Ari on the podcast. Ari was at the top of the Iran-Contra fiasco. He was dealing with Robert Maxwell. He met Epstein. And he's got a lot more to say than those in the mainstream media. Ari, thank you for coming on. Would you just like to tell the people who you are and how you got into intelligence?
I worked for Israeli military intelligence after spending some time in Israeli military. And as such, I met Robert Maxwell because he worked for us as well.
Ari first joined Israeli intelligence during his 3 years of compulsory military service, 1974 to 1977, working in a code-breaking unit deciphering Iranian communications. Ari had grown up in Tehran, the son of Iraqi Jewish immigrants. At 14, he moved with his mother to Israel, where, on completing his education, he lived in a kibbutz before doing his military service. His fluent Farsi, as well as Arabic, English, French, Spanish, and Hebrew, made him a perfect fit for the role. During this time, he found a way of cracking the code the Iranians used, and also had a hands-on role in Operation Entebbe in 1976, freeing Jewish hostages from a hijacked Air France flight in Kenya. After his military service, Ari moved as a civilian to Israel's prestigious External Relations Department, its premier overseas intelligence operation. There, he monitored the overthrow of the Shah and the rise to power of Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran, had a key role in freeing the 52 American hostages in the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, worked with the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, and was involved in the Iran-Contra affair. He also helped broker arms deals with the Soviet bloc in return for banking Israeli intelligence money behind the Iron Curtain. It was also where he met Robert Maxwell.
So what year did you first meet Robert Maxwell?
I started with him in 1977.
So what year did you meet Epstein?
It was probably early 80s in Maxwell's office.
And how early did Epstein establish a relationship with Maxwell?
Quite early, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how they met, but Epstein was a young man about my age at the time. I was working for Israeli intelligence, and he was working, or had some sort of connection, with Robert Maxwell. And he spent a lot of time in Maxwell's office, at the time, at the Daily Mirror. So the mainstream media is reporting that Ghislaine Maxwell went to America in the 90s and then got in this relationship with Epstein. Is that bunk? Were there prior relationships to what's being reported? Well, there was a prior relationship between them in London, and then she goes off to America to join Epstein. There was a prior relationship. Actually, Daddy helped create that relationship. Epstein at the time was a young, good-looking guy, Jewish boy from New York, and that was a nice little thing to have the daughter meet. And his motivation behind that was an intelligence motivation, or there was going to be some romance there. He thought he was putting his daughter together with some sort of relationship for some sort of personal relationship. So it's like the emperor's built power by marrying the kids off to other powerful people, that kind of thing. That's right. How high up in intelligence were you back then? At the time, I was working for military intelligence. Everybody mistakes it for the Mossad. I was not working for the Mossad. I was actually a civilian working for the military intelligence, and they were in charge of the Iran project. We were working through an independent committee that was running the Israeli policy towards Iran. So we had a lot of connections and power up there.
In 1980, Harry was appointed to the Joint Committee, a small select group of high-ranking personnel from military intelligence and the Mossad that oversaw Iran-Israeli relations. The prime objective of the Joint Committee at the time was to supply arms to Iran to fight Saddam Hussein's Iraqi regime in the Iran-Iraq War. This led to his involvement in the Iran-Contra affair.
There are a lot of young people watching this, and they're not familiar with Iran-Contra. Could you just explain what Iran-Contra was and your role in that? Yeah. The Israelis started to, we call it the Iran-Contra because of me. I'll explain. Israelis were running a policy of arming the Iranian military to fight Iraq and Saddam Hussein, because at the time, the Israelis saw Saddam as a threat, and they had an ongoing alliance with Iran, first with the Shah, then for another 10 years with the Khomeini regime. And we were pretty close to the Iranians at the time, and they were arming the Iranians against Saddam. Saddam had invaded Iran's southern province, Khuzestan, wanted it because it was rich oil and so on. But Israel helped the Iranians throw Saddam's army out of Iran. It was a scandal because it was a secret that Israel had a relationship with the Khomeini regime. The Iran-Contra scandal centered around the clandestine sale of U.S. arms to Iran in the 80s under the Reagan administration. Although officially there was an arms embargo on Iran, the U.S. were secretly selling weapons to Israel, which was passing them on to Iran at a profit. In return, Iran promised to secure the release of American hostages held in Lebanon by Hezbollah. The Nicaraguan Contra rebels later became involved when Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North of the U.S. National Security Council began secretly diverting some of the profits from the Iranian arms sales to the right-wing Contra insurgents, who were fighting against Nicaragua's socialist Sandinista government. And you were involved with Robert Maxwell around this time. Also, he had a big role in distributing Promise software. Could you explain to people what that project was about? Promise software had the back door at the time, and the Israelis would have it sold through Robert Maxwell. And then we'd be able to follow or see what other intelligence services were doing through the computers.
Promise was a software program
developed by communications expert William Hamilton for the U.S. National Security Agency, NSA, in the 1970s. Hamilton then further developed the software through a non-profit organization, INSLAW, before it was reclaimed by U.S. intelligence. The software was able to track the movements of vast numbers of people and was seen as a way of keeping tabs on dissidents and terrorists. When Israeli intelligence got their hands on the program, they quickly realized the software could be fitted with a back door and sold on to other intelligence agencies, giving Israel access to government secrets around the world. To achieve this, Israeli intelligence needed a company to sell the bugged software. They turned to British media mogul Maxwell, who they'd already worked with. Maxwell had been laundering Israeli money made through the arms sales to Iran. Through Maxwell's front company, Degum, Promise was sold to a number of regimes around the world, including Guatemala, where it led to the capture and disappearance of 20,000 government opponents, and South Africa, where it helped round up, disappear, or maim almost 12,000 black activists. Bugged Promise software was sold by the US to a number of governments, including Britain, Australia, South Korea, Iraq, Canada, and even the USSR. And this is all described in the book, The Assassination of Robert Maxwell, which quotes you extensively. How accurate is that book? And how do you think Maxwell died? I'm not commenting about the book, but I believe Maxwell died because he was about to be arrested by the British government over the pension scandal. As you may know, he stole the pension funds from the Mirror, yes? And the Israelis did not want him to sing. So I believe the Israelis took care of him. Well, that's a very relevant answer. And I was hoping you would say something like that. Because I believe that people didn't want Epstein to sing, and he met his untimely demise. Do you think that? Maxwell and Epstein probably had a similar end. Now, in the book, they're pointing at Israeli intelligence taking Maxwell out. To take someone out in a federal US prison, that would have to have been a concerted effort between multiple intelligence agencies. I would assume so. And if you read my book, I spent time in MCC in that exact same facility. Almost impossible to commit suicide in those cells. It would have had to be some coordination between different agencies, yes. As I mentioned earlier, MCC is the Metropolitan Correctional Center, a detention center in New York, where Jeffrey Epstein was held and where he allegedly committed suicide in August 2019. Because Epstein was 6 foot tall, to hang off the top bunk, his feet would still be on the ground. And you can commit suicide by leaning forward. But that wouldn't fracture those bones in your neck. All I'm saying is it was probably impossible. You could probably commit suicide outside the cell, but not in the cell. I've looked at the unredacted black book, and I've seen the names in there. And people often speculate as to who gave the order for him to go. Do you have any theories yourself? Well, he had to go for various reasons, lots of reasons. And I believe that the Israelis wanted him to go because he might have started singing about what type of material he had or had given the Israelis. Now, after this first arrest, he got the sweetheart deal. How was that arranged? And why, later on, was he not prosecuted in a similar way? Initially, he got the sweetheart deal because the Israelis felt that this could be under control and they could still work with him. But then later, they felt that he had to go. It was too much. How do you feel about his co-conspirators? Ghislaine Maxwell, Jean-Luc Brunel, Leslie Wexner, just to name a few. If I were them, his co-conspirators, I'd go into hiding. I'd just disappear. What do you believe that the role of the Clintons was in all this? Well, one of Epstein's main targets at the time, going back to 1992, was Bill Clinton. The Israelis feared him. They thought he was going to be another Jimmy Carter, to force them to give concessions to the Palestinians, or to the Arabs, as Carter did. So Epstein had a role in compromising President Clinton. If Wexner gave Epstein this mansion for free, the mansion was already camered up. And I just recently listened to a victim, Maria Farmer, I believe her name was, who was assaulted at a Wexner property. The cops were called out and they basically worked for Wexner. And her impression was that Wexner, in the intelligence agency operation, was Epstein's boss in America. Do you concur with that? Possibly. At different stages, he may have had different bosses. And what do you believe Prince Andrew's role in all this was? Prince Andrew made Epstein a very valuable asset of Israeli intelligence due to the fact that he was a royal in Britain. And he could attract certain personalities to play golf with him and maybe have fun with them in the evening with girls provided by Mr. Epstein. And then they would be compromised. Certain personalities were compromised by Prince Andrew, by bringing them into this trap. Now, Prince Andrew, the way I see it, or the Israelis saw it, he was doing it for fun. It was just the decadent royal doing it for fun. Yeah, the impression I get is that he was a useful idiot with a big name. Very useful idiot with a big name. Very bored, decadent. He's having fun doing this. Epstein got the sweetheart deal when Obama and Hillary Clinton were in power, and now Trump is in power. Do you think that makes any difference? Like, will people be brought to justice in this case? Or will there just be a continuation of cover-ups? Personally, I think there will probably be a cover-up. Probably an attempted cover-up. But who knows? There are lots of people that got hurt by Mr. Epstein and this operation. So you never know. You never know. If Epstein was only a mid-level manager of the operation, is the operation continuing right now, in a way that people aren't aware of? The Israelis continue operating. They don't stop. Is every intelligence agency then? Is it like an arms race where you have to become more devious and diabolical, and they're all engaged in the honey trap schemes? No. I wouldn't say every intelligence agency does these things. Intelligence agencies do collect information, I think. But this, the Israelis always took it to an extreme, and they always claim we're in danger. The Arabs are about to destroy us, and so we need an intelligence agency that does certain things. Earlier on, you said that a sweetheart deal came about because of Israeli intelligence. How much of a pull does Israeli intelligence have in America? There is an Israel lobby in the United States that has lots of pull. I don't need to get into it. And when you're told to do something by the Israeli government, they will do it. So it seems the people in these operations, including yourself, when your usefulness is over, you are sacrificed one way or another. Either killed, incarcerated, criminalized, so that you can't speak in court. What happened in your situation? In my situation, I believe that what really happened was that I was into the peace deal with the Palestinians, and they had to get rid of me at the time. I went to see, as the advisor to Prime Minister Shamir at the time, I went and saw Arafat, and we started the Oslo process. People in Israel were not very happy about it. So they tried to set me up with the Iran deal, which I was part of. But to everybody's surprise, I did not plead guilty and ask for a pardon. Then I went to trial and I got acquitted. Very unusual situation, but it happened. And the whole thing blew up because I got acquitted and I testified in Congress. The whole story's written in my book. In 1989, Ari was working as a personal intelligence advisor to Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir. He became involved in secret talks between Israeli intelligence and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO. At the time, Shamir was involved in clandestine plans with PLO leader Yasser Arafat to organize a Palestinian uprising against King Hussein's regime in Jordan. The intention was to create a Palestinian homeland within Jordan, thus relieving tension around the West Bank and Gaza Strip in Israel, and ultimately leading to peace between Israelis and Palestinians. As part of the talks between Israel and the PLO, Ari was sent to Sri Lanka to meet a PLO representative and organize the transfer of cash via arms sold to local Tamil freedom fighters. This had the twofold objective of bringing Israel closer to the PLO and helping to free three Israeli soldiers held hostage in Lebanon. However, the PLO talks were leaked, and there was a backlash against Shamir for doing deals with Israel's sworn enemies. Ari believes he was used as a scapegoat for the regime, lured to America on the pretense of meeting an acquaintance. Ari was arrested in Los Angeles in 1989 and charged with conspiracy to sell three U.S. C-130 aircraft to Iran in contravention of the U.S. Arms Export Control Act. The charge was a fit-up and was discredited in court by Ari's lawyer during the subsequent trial, leading to his acquittal. Ari later testified about the Iran-Contra affair to the U.S. Congress. He has been unable to return to Israel ever since. During the Iran-Contra period, who were the highest people in the American government that you were liaising with? Did you have access to Bush, Reagan, Oliver North, Felix? Well, we had the access. The Israeli government had access to the highest levels. But as for us, we had access to the higher levels of the CIA. I mean the National Security Council in the White House and so on. Pretty high up. In 1986, Ari personally briefed then-President George Bush Sr. about arms sales to Iran during Bush's visit to Jerusalem. Would you say that Reagan was just a figurehead at that point and George H.W. Bush perhaps had more power? Over intelligence matters, yes. Because George H.W. Bush was CIA and worked for the CIA. He was head of the CIA earlier on. So yeah, I would say so. I've written a book about Barry Seal, American Made, who was flying the cocaine in as part of Iran-Contra. Do you think that some of Epstein's money came from laundering drugs? The Israelis weren't into drugs so much. They were into guns. So I would believe that Epstein's funds actually came from Israel more than from the drugs that were sold to Central America. And why I claim, by the way, that Iran-Contra was named after me. It was because after the uranium project was sort of over, I was Israel's point man in Central America for a while, working at the Israeli consulate in New York, flying back and forth. So on the weapons story, what was Maxwell's relationship with Khashoggi and Epstein's relationship with Khashoggi? Well, weapons. I don't think Epstein had a serious role in the weapons trade. Everybody seemed to connect him with that, but I don't believe that for a minute. Robert Maxwell was laundering funds for the Israeli government, money that was being received from Iran for the weapons they were transferring to the Iranian government. That was Maxwell's role. We had a relationship with him for quite a long time. But again, once he got into trouble financially, the Israelis did not want him to sing. He was about to be arrested by the British authorities over the mirror scam. During Iran-Contra, we had the cocaine coming into Arkansas and then getting distributed throughout America. Oliver North was supposedly in charge of that under George H.W. Bush, and Bill Clinton was providing the security. the state police, which was protecting that. Do you agree with those statements?
Probably there was drug dealing back and forth, yes. We as Israelis knew about it, but the details I'm not sure about. The Israelis weren't part of that.
How does the president, like George H.W. Bush, do a photo with a big seizure of cocaine? Does he get away with actually coordinating bringing cocaine into the country at the same time?
I have no answer to that. I mean, it is what it is.
How does Prince Andrew get away with messing around with young underage girls for such a long time? And some people believe that George H.W. Bush lost the presidency to Clinton because of the testimonies that were going on in Congress in 1991 and 92 over the Iran-Contra affair. And one of the people that testified was myself in the Senate and in the House of Representatives. And if you remember, they were controlled by Democrats, the two houses, while the Republican was president. But before that, he was still doing very well. He had a very high priority rating. When you're called to testify like that, what kind of questions do they ask you?
Everything, very detailed. Some of it was closed.
Okay, who's more likely to get extradited to America? Julian Assange or Prince Andrew?
Probably Julian Assange.
And why is he so dangerous to them?
He knows a lot, but out a lot, and, quote, unquote, we have to teach people a lesson. You cannot put out this information. If you do, you're going to pay for it.
So, do you find that when you put out your information, there's a line you have to draw?
Of course. You have to draw a line. And at the time, I was real lucky that Mr. Clinton became president because I testified against George Bush, and if he would have been president, I would probably have been dead meat.
Have you had threats on your life over the years?
At the time, yes. I was almost killed in Washington driving together with a very well-known journalist and also a friend called Robert Paddy. He died of cancer recently. But we were about to be killed when I flew from Australia to Washington to testify in the Senate.
Wow. What attracts you then to this kind of work if you know there's a risk?
Now we're doing political consultancy work. We have a company in Canada that does the political consultancy. I say we have a privatized diplomacy. We help different governments or different personalities politically, and getting them into the right position. We're pretty well known. We just recently helped the Sudanese government.
Would you say that when you first joined military intelligence, you were idealistic?
Yes, I never became cynical. But you start seeing the real thing.
What was the first event that caused you to start seeing the real thing?
The attitude of the Israelis towards the Palestinians.
Things like Epstein. Robert Maxwell wanted Epstein to join our team, but we refused. So Maxwell goes to his friend over our heads at Israel, who was head of military intelligence, Ehud Barak, and gets Epstein to join.
And what was your impression of Epstein then?
Did you think he was this supervillain, super intelligent?
No. My impression was just another useful idiot.
Ghislaine Maxwell speaks four languages. She can pilot submarines and underwater robots, and she's been described as quite an intelligent, villainous character. Do you agree with that?
She is an intelligent person, yeah, sure.
Do you think that she was bringing these kids into Epstein's orbit to impress him because she loved him?
She was working with him.
But there was a romantic relationship at some point.
Well, there was a relationship at some point. Because you have to also understand that it turned out that Mr. Epstein did not like women.
He wanted kids. And do you think that when she was rebuffed and she found that out and she was in love with him, she continued in this conspiracy to try and be around him?
Yeah, that's right.
What was your impression of her when you first met her then? Well, a smart, well-schooled young lady. At the time, she was pretty young.
Do you think this will blow over? Or will it be an unsolved mystery like the Kennedy assassination, where there's still speculation?
Epstein was not as important as Kennedy. Let's not give him too much credit. But there's a but here. I believe when all the nasty stories about Israeli intelligence or the Israeli state start coming to the surface, and they might, the story will probably continue. So from my research, I've asked you the questions at the top of my mind. Is there anything you feel I've left out that you would like to tell people?
Yeah, and again, Prince Andrew was a prize for the Israelis. Epstein was able to trap real important people and compromise them. And this is why the royal family really were upset when they found out about this stuff. Again, a useful idiot.
And then, for Andrew to go back after the conviction and be the guest of honor at Epstein's coming out of prison party. This is what flabbergasted people a lot, especially in this country.
Again, useful idiot. He was having fun, and he didn't want to. Little girls. He liked little girls. He didn't want to give it up, did he? Until the very end.